Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is the Athletics dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzine with you. I'll just be honest with you. It's Monday night. We've got to get this podcast out and rolling because the Blue Jackets start the first round of the playoffs on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Tampa Bay Lightning. You're all familiar with them. Allison Lucan is here.
Hello.
And an old friend of the program. You would have met him last spring, 15 months ago now, from the Athletics Tampa Bay Bureau. Joe Smith is here. Joe, say hello.
Hey, hello, everybody. It's good to see. Good to talk to you guys. I felt like it's old times here.
I know, right? We should. It's a regular occurrence now. Blue Jackets Lightning. Best of seven starts Tuesday. A lot to get to here. Blue Jackets, of course, with a rousing qualifying round win over Toronto in Game 5 on Sunday. They had Monday to sort of today to sort of catch their breath a little bit. They did practice. And then right back at it, the series starts on Tuesday. So I want to go back to this and just relive, I guess, for Columbus, it's the glory. For Tampa, it's the nightmare. Let me just frame it this way, too. I always felt like the Blue Jackets, and I think Allison would agree with me on this. We've talked about it before. They were a better team than they showed last year and had more talent than their seeding. And still, however, so I guess what I'm saying is the upset of in that first round to people who followed Columbus closely probably didn't feel quite as huge as it did to people outside Columbus or around the league or weren't that familiar with their team, the talent on that team. But this was still undeniably a real shock to Tampa Bay. It's a President's Trophy team, an unbelievable regular season. Go back to that series last year and just sort of an overarching talk, if you would, Joe, about what it was like to see the Lightning get humbled like that, to play out of their element so much, I think, as they did. Game one was a shocker. But just how surreal that was to see that team be felled in the first round of the playoffs last year.
Yeah, it's really surreal. When I look back, I mean, you cover the team all season. They won 62 games. Never really had to sweat too much adversity. And I was writing articles about comparing them to 95-96 Red Wings and how good they were. And just, you know, it was one of those things that they didn't really have a meaningful game for such a long time that once you started to hit it, you could really tell who was more prepared and who had been in kind of those playoff-style games for a month like Columbus had. But I think there was the building in Amalie Arena, I remember to this day, was shocked after game one. Like, it was just stunned silence because, you know, a 3-0 lead, almost a 4-1 lead, 4-0 lead in the first part of second period, and all of a sudden kind of the wheels fell off. So they weren't used to seeing the team kind of getting in a tough spot or have to find their way through something. And now you could look back, you know, as you mentioned, Columbus wasn't, you know, quote unquote, as bad of a team as, you know, people made them out to be in terms of the biggest upset of all time. The Lightning weren't like 20 points better than Columbus, you know, on the ice. But obviously they executed better. It was a perfect storm. I think the Lightning put it in what happened in the series where Columbus played really well. The Lightning had some injuries. They had one of their best players suspended with a questionable and ill-advised hit. Their goaltending wasn't quite as sharp as it'd been all season. And you got what you got. But they were also one of their every other number one seed in the league lost in the first round too, which people don't really bring up too much as well. Yeah, but it was definitely surprised everybody and it hit home, especially because the Lightning – of a team that had been so close for so long, and then all of a sudden you have one of your best shots, one of your best teams ever, and to go out within, 8 or 9 days. It was definitely a humbling and somewhat embarrassing thing, I think, for a lot of the guys that had to listen to it all summer on the golf courses and at home and wait all summer long and go to the awards with all these coronation for Kucherov and for Vasilevsky and John Cooper. It was like a pity party there. People kind of said, hey, how are you holding up? What happened to you? What kind of thing? And it's such a weird, awkward situation to be there in this big moment. And all of a sudden you're coming off this loss. So but I can't believe it's been 15 months though. It feels like it's been forever ago.
Yeah. Crazy. So the Blue Jackets are fighting through some injuries. Of course, Josh Anderson, who played such a huge role in their first round win last year over Tampa, is with them in Toronto. He's still skating with the Black Aces, so he's not a part of their regular lineup. That suggests to me that he's not going to be ready in game one. But I'll also tell you this, we're not there in Toronto. We're not watching him practice. I'll do my level best. Allison will do her level best. I really don't expect to know before Josh Anderson plays. I don't think there's going to be any intelligence shared with that. Also, Elvis Pazlikins suffered an apparent injury late at some point in game four. So they're without him for now. John Tortorella called him out. So it is Korpisalo and Kivlenieks most likely in game one. Joe, tell us about, because you think those are big injuries, and they are. But what's going on with Tampa? Stamkos likely out, Hedman possibly out, other injuries. What's going on with the Lightning? They've got some big injuries at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, like two of their franchise cornerstones. I'm not expecting them to be available for game one on Tuesday. Stamkos, we thought he'd be hopeful or possibly for game one a few weeks ago when he was practicing with the team in Toronto for the first time since his core surgery and his systems go. And then he had another, I don't know if it's a setback, but the core surgery, as you guys know, was just a complicated rehab. And so he kind of was not participating in the practices as much last week and didn't practice Friday. And we don't know what happened today. There's no intel, as you mentioned. So he's out indefinitely until he's not, is the word that Cooper used the other day. So I don't think series, but I don't think he's going to be ready for game one, at least. Victor Hedman, you know, I think his absence would be looming even larger. We all watched the replays the other night, turned his ankle, twisted his ankle leg on that, back skating there. Played us a million times in his life, and that one time, just bad luck, and he slammed his stick against the boards four times on the way up. So you could tell, emotional player, like, just watching that made me feel like he thought something was badly wrong, but we should know more on Tuesday, an update on Victor Hedman, whether this is being gamesmanship that they don't really know or that they want Columbus to know how bad it is, but hopefully we'll know more on Tuesday before game one of his prognosis. So unfortunately for Lightning, they're the deepest team I've ever seen with them up front and on the blue line. And it'll be a big loss, but they think they still have type of depth and talent that, you know, this will still be obviously a really good series no matter what.
And Joe, there's another defenseman out as well. No, or did I misremember that?
No, Jan Rusa is also out. He was the partner for Victor Hedman for most of the year. And he took a shot from David Pastrnak in Wednesday's round robin in the third period, hasn't played since. So, and he was a guy who had a leg/foot injury in February, which is why he didn't play until the exhibition game and then the round robin. So he's a big, so Lightning are down to seven defensemen now. Only brought nine to the hub. So they're down to seven defensemen, which you like to see Zach Bogosian and Braden Coburn playing some, at least on Tuesday.
You can never have too many defensemen, as John Tortorella likes to say. Porty mentioned, you know, and you talked about the impact of the series and all of the drama that the team had to put up with after. We've talked about this before. You and I wrote a little bit about part of this before the Tampa Bay Columbus regular season game. But what changes, even past that game here in Columbus, what changes resulted in Tampa Bay from what happened at the end of last season for them?
Well, they need to take a long, hard look in how they are doing things. They did make an overhaul or changed their completely their system or style that's made them so successful over the years. But there were things that kind of were amplified by that series loss and by the season before, quite frankly. Last year, they weren't quite as good as what the record was. Vasilevskiy made them look a lot better than they actually were, too, with the way he played. So the main focus was, you know, reducing scoring chances, especially ones that were in the slot area or in front of the net, which they've done, I think they're top five or so now, I think, in suppressing some of those chances now. Less the two on one Rodman rushes. They really wanted to also be better, support offensive and defensive in the zone with their forwards coming back. A lot of stuff like that they really wanted to create those better habits the course of the season. And I think as a result, I think like you mentioned in our story, and just a better overall structure and team play in terms of the guys buying in all together. And they don't have to play the Globetrotter type game. They can grind it out a little bit. They can use their force check. They can chip and chase if they have to. They don't really feel to carry it into their zone all the time. They have the personnel now. They can do that and play different ways with Coleman and Goodrow and obviously Pat Maroon and Mitchell Stevens, who you'll see on Tuesday, rookie prospect who's their fourth line center. Pilat is healthier as he's been in a couple of years. Braden Point's fast as I've ever seen on the ice. So, I don't think they're able to play a couple different kind of styles now, and they're also just kind of a little more tightened up in the way they play defensively, which has really helped Vasilevskiy the second part of the season.
Gotcha. And you mentioned something earlier that I wanted to touch on with this year, how Tampa Bay didn't have to play with that sense of urgency going into last year's playoffs. Do you think that the round robin, the stakes are different, right? They're different than what Columbus just faced. Is this a similar obstacle for Tampa Bay again, or how do you think they're going to be prepared to go into now games that actually really, really matter versus games that matter?
Yeah, I mean, I think as John Cooper said today, there's no replicating what Columbus just went through in a five-game series and an overtime and the emotions of blowing a three-goal lead with 4 minutes left and then all coming back with that the euphoria of winning a game five to advance. There's a lot for a lot of the young players, I'm sure, and the veterans too. But I think Lightning did learn from last year in a sense. They knew the playoffs were coming, obviously, this time. They approached training camp in a certain way where they were doing a lot of game-like situations for their double scrimmages. They treated the round robin, I thought, seriously as well. It wasn't a must-win game, but they won the first two games and played a very physical style that, they weren't just mailing in or trying to avoid things. So beating Boston and Washington in back-to-back games was, I thought, pretty impressive for that style, which they did that with a lot of pushback. And those two teams have tried to push them around for a couple of years, and this time Lightning obviously did push back and respond and find a way to win. So, to answer your question, I don't think it'll quite be the same as last year when they got really lulled into a comfort zone and saw that Vasilevskiy masked a lot of their mistakes, and then they got into game one where they got a little too greedy, and then Columbus made them pay, and that was part of the comeback or the sweep. I think the Lightning are in a better position. They're not going to be quite as battle-tested as Columbus is from what they did the last 5 days, but they're also a little fresher too, and I think they got a little more depth, and so I think you don't know until game one goes, but that's something definitely to watch. They were one of two teams to vote against the 2014 format for that reason, of being teams from the round robin that wouldn't feel like they were in the same position as teams in the play-in series. So I guess we'll find out more of that answer on Tuesday.
And you mentioned earlier too the impact on the kind of the wrinkles in Tampa Bay's play now, the impact on Vasilevskiy. What do you see in him right now? Where do you think his game is? Obviously, we don't know till we see the puck hit the ice. But what's your read on him this season, and also compared to last year's playoffs?
Well, he looks good. I think last year, 856 save percentage. It wasn't all on him. The penalty kill wasn't good at all, but definitely wasn't what you expect from a guy like that. And he was one of the few guys after the season and the exit interview, go up to the media and say, hey, I need to be better. I have to be better. Not just we as a group, personal accountability. And he took that personally from the night he got the Vezina Trophy, the most, significant personal day of his life, other than, getting medals in the world championships and such. He said, this doesn't mean anything without a Stanley Cup. And I know he didn't have the best start to the season. He turned it around December, worked with a sports psychologist to kind of help him a little bit along the way. And I think he had 11 start winning streak. They were part of a 23-2-1. He won run from December to February. He was a big part of. So, they're not going to get where they want to go without him being on his A game. And so I think it's so important, especially with Victor Hedman out, that he is playing that way. So I think you're going to see a better performance from him. And I think the team's got to be better in front of the net. Columbus did a great job last year of traffic and getting bodies towards the net and bumping him a little bit. And he mentioned after the season, they did a really good job scouting, scouting report and knew better. And so one thing I think you guys watch too is instead of before when there was traffic in front of the net, he tried to go low underneath the legs or try to look for seams. And now he's kind of using that 6'3" or so frame to look up above through the traffic to kind of get, and it's kind of helped him a little bit too. So I think he'll be a lot better than he was last spring.
You're listening to the Athletics Front and Nationwide podcast. We'll take a break and be back with you on the other side. Support for Front and Nationwide is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Big news! Manscaped just launched in Canada. For those listeners in Canada, you can be one of the first Canadians to experience their life-changing products. The third-generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents. The battery will last 90 minutes. It's water-resistant. It illuminates the trimming area with an LED light, and it comes with a charging stand. If you're listening to me speak right now, I want you to experience it firsthand. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20. That's THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off, free shipping, manscaped.com, and use the code ATHLETIC20. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. So go to manscaped.com today and use code THEATHLETIC20. And now, a message from Indochino. All right, we are joined by Joe Smith of the Athletic Tampa Bay. Joe, tell me what this looks like without Hedman, what this looks like without Stamkos. There's plenty of firepower up front. How do they get around Hedman not being there? That's a hole that's impossible to fill. Who eats more minutes? Who moves up on that pair? And what do they look like back there? And if you can do it with the defense and the forwards, if you would.
Yeah, on defense, you'll basically have Ryan McDonough and Eric Chernak, who are the shutdown pair for the most part. They'll probably get a lot of the minutes, and McDonough played 26 other night in the last round robin against Philly, and he, you know, he's used to playing number one role in New York, has that experience, and the pull did him good because he had a broken foot in January, February time, and he probably took him a while, but he looks, just by the way he's skating and playing, like he's back to his old self. So that's a good sign for him or them. And the left side, you also have Mikhail Sergachev, who's capable of playing 20 to 25, 26 minutes, and he really grew into a two-way force this year, not just gifted guy that he can create offensively. He's at the top spot of the power play now, where Hedman was. He's there now. Really good, you know, physically in his own end in battles. And I think he'll be a guy that can be leaned on in meatier matchups. So I think they're going to be one taking a lion's share of the minutes. And you might be able to play guys like Bogosian and Coburn in the third pair of minutes versus the top two pairs with Shattenkirk and Sergachev and Chernak and McDonough. And up front, they had the top line was already without Stamkos. It was Andre Palat and Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov, who they were terrific in the round robin exhibition game. So they really locked in and playing well. And the second line, which Stamkos would be on if he was playing, was with Kelly and Kalorda, now Tyler Johnson, who's been playing well too. He's a playoff type performer. And so that could be a good sign for them. And then I think there's a little more depth on the third and fourth lines with Goudreau and Coleman on the third line with Yeti Gordon in the middle, and then the fourth with Maroon, Mitchell Stevens, the rookie, and Paquette. So they're pretty thick from top to bottom, and they've got some depth in that position. So I think, you know, they certainly have enough guys they can score and play in the power play. So I think the bigger need, I think, is getting a guy like Victor Hedman back, especially if you're going to go into a long series or a long playoff run.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at those forward lines and just hearing that you rattle off the names and, that guy. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, that guy too. There are guys on the fourth line that would be on the second line in some situations. There are third line guys that would certainly be on the second line with most teams. When you look at this Blue Jackets lineup offensively, the forwards, because, you listen to Sheldon Keefe talk after the series the other night. He was asked what surprised him about the Blue Jackets, and he said something that I think a lot of Blue Jackets fans were like, what? He said their forwards are a lot more skilled than we realized. And then I'm thinking, you know what, that's an NHL coach saying that. He knows what the hell he's talking about. Maybe we're selling these guys short. When you look at this Blue Jackets group of forwards, is there anyone who gives you pause, anyone who gives you concern? I mean, there's some talent there, but who stands out as a guy that Tampa's going to be challenged to check?
Well, I think a guy who's made a big impression, of course, around the hockey world the last few weeks is Dubois. And I think the hat trick and the skill plays that he made in tight and the confidence level he had. I know he had that kind of public display with Tortorella, and I know guys like Daniel Cavalier had those back here in Tampa and speak to what that can do. But, you know, he's a guy, and Liam is Foudy, right? He's very dynamic skater, can be dangerous that way, and not shy of the stage too. And I think, you know, John Cooper was asked today about that, about that being a blue collar team, quote unquote. And he kind of bristled a bit in the sense that, yeah, they play a style, they limit you to 3 goals or less, and they play that really well, and they play structured, which is what he said. They've got some, you know, blue chip talent, as he said, and, you know, some guys both on the back end too, with Horinsky and Jones, they are really kind of like forwards too, that they really get up in the rush and create offensive chances. So, you know, they're not the Panarins or the Duchesnes and the bigger name guys, but, you know, they're certainly good enough to beat Toronto and creates enough offense to do that. So it's kind of the sneaky guys, the ones that kind of get you the most in playoffs, kind of the unsung guys. And so I think that's something that the Lightning will have to take a good look at as the series goes on.
Not that one guy scares the Tampa Bay Lightning. Not suggesting that, but what do you think the response or the feeling is with the Lightning that Josh Anderson probably won't be there at the start, may not be there for the series? What's the level of relief with that?
Well, I mean, I don't think they'll say it, but, you know, no one, everybody who watched the series last year knew how much of a role he played in the forecheck. You know, he had guys, you know, kind of peeking over their shoulder looking where this guy was coming. You know? And I think now with the team that they have built, they have enough guys that are able to kind of deliver their own punishment. I think you're going to see a really relentless forecheck with the Lightning in the series. I think they're going to try to pounce on them because they know they have had the long series with Toronto. Kind of, I say impose their will, but, you know, use the speed, use the skill that they have and, you know, create a lot of chances in the offensive zone. And I think, you know, as opposed to kind of being where Columbus kind of took it to Tampa in certain ways last year with Josh Anderson, a big part of that, kind of go the other way around. So, and they have guys that will be able to respond. And, you know, Goudreau and Coleman have already fought since they've been here, and Maroon and Bogosian, if he's playing, he's a dynamic, he's a big guy on defense. So I don't think that fear is going to be there necessarily in the series with Josh Anderson specifically, but I'm really excited to see kind of how the back and forth chess match with Cooper and Tortorella goes as this goes on.
Joe, to that point, you know, and we know this, the guys are not necessarily always forthcoming, particularly before a series starts, but how personal is this for Tampa Bay, for the coaches, for the players, in your opinion?
Yeah, and then obviously they're not going to say it. And I honestly do think that they're not taking this as a huge revenge game. Like, they don't think they hate Columbus. I think they're more, you know, kind of redeeming themselves from what they saw that they didn't do last year. It's always going to be with them. They're always going to have to be part of their story and their DNA. John Cooper's won it from day one and use it as positive energy to kind of get you through the season. I think it's personal in the sense that they don't want to be that team anymore. They need to want to shed that label of what happened last year. And the only way to do that is to win game one and to win a series and then go into the second round and won't be talking about Columbus Blue Jackets anymore. You know, I think what they did, which was really smart, was in training camp, they brought in a motivational speaker, John Gordon, who has worked with University of Virginia basketball when they went from losing the number 16 seed the next year to win the national championship. He worked with Alabama football and Clemson football in terms of creating the right mindset for a team. The only thing he told them was, don't defend your status as an elite team. Attack something, a new challenge going forward. Attack something new. So instead of looking back, and it's been the whole season thinking that way, they were kind of attacking and moving forward with what they had. You know, they weren't the champions. They don't need to defend anything. So they felt that way and they took it personally. And I think you started to see after November and December that you really – they were asking and asked questions about Columbus, but I don't think they think that they really was in the back of their mind so much. So I think it's right now it's more so of, you know, they have a chance to rewrite their own story now. They have a chance that they don't have to be a punchline anymore. They don't have to be the team that's, you know, people talk about in trivia, back trivia cards, or who's the team that lost the President Trophy winners in four-game sweep. You know, they have a chance to advance the narrative this way, and they have the best team that they've had in a long time to do it. So with the crunch coming up, there's no better time than the present for them to kind of, you know, quote unquote, avenge this and find a way into round two, which is where the narrative will definitely change into something else.
I'll ask this to both of you, Joe and Porty. Is it personal for the coaches, do you think? Joe, you go first.
I think in a sense that John Cooper is obviously a very confident coach. He's the longest tenure coach in the league. The winningest coach in Tampa Bay history. He passed Tortorella on that like a year and a half ago, but he doesn't have the cup, right? He doesn't have what Tortorella has. And I think, if you watch what happened last year's series, I think Tortorella did maybe do a better job of finding ways in the matchups and getting the team through it all. So I don't know, if, you know, hard to say, you know, if you were having beer with John Cooper, maybe you might be able to say something more on this. But yeah, I mean, he's prideful and competitive and confident. And a series like that will knock you off your pedestal a little bit. It'll humble you. And I think that's something that he learned from. And there's nothing more, I'm sure, than he would like to have is find a way to knock out the team that knocked him out, coach that knocked him out last year, and get the team to the next level. He's won at every level of his coaching career. USHL, AHL, in every year it's been the second year of his time there. We're on year, what is it, 7 or 8 now with him, and he's had his chances, and I think this is something that really means a lot, of course, and whether it's Tortorella or whether it's AV or somebody else, it's go time for these guys, and I think he realizes that.
I think John Tortorella was I think he feels as though there was not a proper level of respect paid from the Lightning to the Blue Jackets. I tried to get him going on it today because, you know, the Blue Jackets beating Toronto in the qualifying series has been billed an upset, has been billed a choke job by Toronto. Columbus and Toronto had the same number of points this season. So that's a little strange.
Yeah.
I think Toronto, and maybe this is just how John Tortorella is wired. I don't know. Maybe, Joe, you remember something about the handshake line that I don't. He feels as though that Tampa series was dismissed, and he has said this on radio shows in Columbus, was dismissed as a fluke. And I do agree to a point where I don't think sweeping someone in 4 games is a fluke, but I do think it was an upset. I don't think that's a stretch at all. But this is how John Tortorella is wired, and I'll be interested to see what kind of stuff comes up with that, what the handshake line might look like afterward. Because I do think, and honestly, these games, Tampa and Columbus games, even before the playoffs last year, they've had some nasty games. Really nasty games, yeah, where they kind of bring it out of them. And there was the great scene, I think it was at the end of Game 2 in Tampa, where it was, yes, Riley Nash was sitting on the boards, and correct me if I'm wrong, Allison, it was Victor Hedman was standing in the neutral zone during a timeout or a stoppage. And Pierre McGuire, I think, relayed this to the world. He's basically saying, you know, you guys are really good at blowing leads like this, like talking shit, which that happens. This is the pros, baby. Yeah. But I still feel like there is a sense with the Blue Jackets, chip on their shoulder, that they're still seen as a newbie or a fluke, not a team that's really on Tampa's level. And we've already hit you with this, but do you get any sense of the vibe with that, or with Tampa, or did what happened last year change the Lightning's view of the Blue Jackets, both Tortorella and the team?
Well, I think that narrative came out because of some of the press conferences during the playoffs last year, or in the first round last year, where, you know, and I think Cooper does this a lot, where he kind of, you know, he doesn't want to cause panic, or he's not one like Tortorella or says we sucked and this and the other team was good, or he doesn't, you know, kind of play to players after games or hit the panic button or whatever else until he said what the 5-alarm fire last year, didn't he?
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was billed as, oh, we had a bad week, or, you know, we had a lot that we could have done better, or like, you know, it's, you know, you're not going to blow things up because you had one, you know, it's one of those things where like, hey, like they might have been perceived the way it was sounded as though that they were saying, oh, it was on us, or if we would have played we would have been better, then we would have won the series. And I can tell you that that's not like an organizational thinking. You know, Julian Breeswell, after the loss, was very humble in Detroit and what happened, and was like, listen, we weren't 20 points better than Columbus Blue Jackets, you know, deserved it. They earned it. They won. Like, time for us to own it and move on, you know? So I think, you know, I wonder why Columbus is viewed that way and Carolina isn't, you know, as Carolina, you know, viewed as the upstart or a team that, you know, quote unquote, the newbie, that every series win is an upset, you know? I know they went to the conference final last year, but I was just wondering if that's, you know, as apples to apples or not. I don't know. I don't know if Brindamore is saying the same thing or not. If they beat Boston in a 4 or 5 matchup, is that going to be a big upset? you know? So
right.
They were President's Trophy champions, I guess, just like Lightning was last year. So I guess you could say that too. But yeah, I think that's interesting to see that even though we're now over Zoom and that we're in press conference rooms and having those conversations, I'd be curious to see if there's any of that back and forth in the post game of reacting to games by both coaches in terms of how that the narrative is shaped, whether it's Lightning win game one or Lightning lose game one, and all of a sudden the Lightning fan base would be losing their minds. To kind of dissect when these things go forward, I think.
Well, it's going to be fun. Joe, you're going to be with us along the way here. So thanks for this. And we look forward to talking to you as we move along. There's a story up on the website right now where Joe and I go back and forth with some of the big topics heading into this series. So you're hopefully listening to this on Tuesday morning before puck drop. That would be some good pregame reading for you as well. Allison, anything else we need to get to?
I think that's it. Here we go.
All right, Joe, thanks so much, man. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks. Looking forward to our Zoom virtual videos this time, as opposed to last time cramped in the press box. So.
Right.
Hopefully right.
We'll make it work somehow. We'll make it work.
Must see TV. So hopefully we get it done. Okay. But thanks so much for having me, guys. Looking forward to working with you guys this series. And I'm guessing and betting it'll be a lot longer than the 4-game one that was last year. So.
Yeah, let's hope. Well, Joe, thanks again. And folks, thanks for listening. We'll be back with you. There's a game on Thursday, so we're still sorting out how we're going to do this, but we'll most likely have a podcast up for you during the day on Friday. So we do Tuesdays and Fridays. We'll shoot to have one up Friday as early as possible after the game on Thursday. So thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you soon.